This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Adam. Welcome back to the Adam Schefter podcast. It is officially draft week, a week we've awaited all year long. And this really is the NFL's Super Bowl of offseason weeks. That's what the draft week is. That's what it's become. It's almost like a national holiday where on Thursday night, everybody's team gets to pick somebody who each fan believes is going to make their team better for the upcoming season. So draft week is here. And for draft week, we are going to be joined by one of the top rated quarterbacks in this upcoming class, a man who led my Michigan Wolverines to a national championship this season, who will be amongst the first players picked on Thursday night, a quarterback that Jim Harbaugh said is the greatest quarterback in Michigan football history, the top quarterback in this draft class, and a man who had the best pro day workout of any quarterback he's ever seen. We'll talk to him about those particular statements from Jim Harbaugh and more. JJ McCarthy will be our guest today on the podcast. But first, before we get to that, we're going to be joined by my friend, the co-host of the Fantasy Focus podcast, Daniel Dopp, as he takes us on this week's Six Pack.
Thank you very much, Adam Schefter. Very excited to be here. It's draft week. Dude, we've been waiting for weeks to get to this week where we finally get to be able to be at the NFL draft. Adam, I told you this weeks ago. I'm going to ask you every single week. Bears, at number one, still have the number one overall pick. Obviously, Caleb Williams seems like a foregone conclusion there, but I know he visited with Chicago and GM Ryan Pace. Anything stand out or notable about that visit?
What was very interesting is that usually when a prospect comes to town, he goes to dinner with the front office, with the coaches, everybody gets to know the player. In this particular case, the Bears front office and coaching staff knows Caleb Williams so well, Daniel, that they handed him off to the team leaders. Here you go, Caleb Williams. Go have dinner with wide receiver DJ Moore, tight end Cole Kmet, linebacker TJ Edwards. Go have dinner with the team leaders so that when the other players ask the respected team leaders, how was dinner? What's Caleb like? The word could come from the players themselves, not the people picking him and coaching him. Very intelligent, smart move by the Chicago Bears organization to send him to dinner with the players. That's not a common occurrence when these players go into a particular city to visit for one of their visits before the draft. This was an unusual step, but if you're the Bears and you know that this is your guy, and you know you're taking him, there's no reason for the front office or the coaching staff to have to get to know Caleb Williams any better than they already do. Let's get him acclimated with his new teammates, with the leaders on this team. Let's let them get a feel for him and report back to the rest of the players about the same type of player that the Bears felt confident enough to move Justin Fields for, to settle on with the number one overall pick in this draft, and to make the face of the franchise in coming years. So Caleb Williams already has gotten the opportunity to know his new Chicago Bears teammates, not just the front office, Daniel, not just the coaches, but his new teammates and the leaders of the Bears team.
How great is that? I mean, he doesn't need to know the front office, but the guys he's going to be in the trenches with day in and day out doing these things, like being able to jumpstart that relationship, it feels so smart. Bears, you know, only have four draft picks. This is going to be a very interesting draft for them to figure things out, but getting Caleb Williams at the top, definitely going to help their team from that perspective. All right, topic number two here, Adam Schefter, the Los Angeles Chargers need a wide receiver. They lost Keenan Allen. They lost Mike Williams. Last year, they drafted Quentin Johnston in the first round. Still have Josh Palmer. Adam, did we get any hints from Chargers GM about what could potentially happen here with the wide receiver?
You know, Daniel, it's funny. These GMs, coaches, they do press conferences before the draft, and they say a lot of nothing. A lot of nothing. But there was one statement that Joe Hortiz made that I'm going to highlight, that somebody highlighted to me. And the statement was this, and I read the words of Joe Hortiz. I can promise you, wide receiver is going to be a deep position in the draft every year. That's just how the game has changed. So if it is a deep position in the draft every year, and the Chargers want to establish their physical dominance as a Jim Harbaugh coach team wants to do, and they feel like this is deep at wide receiver and they can go get a wide receiver later in the draft or next year, do you really think they're going wide receiver at number five if they hold on to that pick? I don't think so. I don't think so. To me, it's a situation where basically they are looking at a lot of different options. And the Chargers have had the number five overall pick twice in franchise history. You know, that pick produced LaDainian Tomlinson and Junior Seau. So wow, this has been a very lucky pick for the Chargers over time, Daniel. Now, saying that, I still think that the Chargers are a potential trade back spot from number five for the Vikings to come up to, because it allows them to stay in front of the Giants at number six. It allows the Chargers to go back and get an offensive lineman that we think that they would like in round one. And I think that the Chargers are in a situation here where they could listen at five, be in a position to move back. The other interesting thing that Joe Ortiz said was that he had GMs that told him, you're not really a GM until you get up in the middle of the night, 3 a.m, wondering about certain decisions that you have to make. And when I heard him say that also during his press conference, I said, Joe Ortiz is one of us. Because I can't tell you how many times I and many people who I'm sure listening to this podcast wake up 3 a.m. thinking about some sort of professional issue, a personal issue, whatever it may be. It happens to me, I would say, most every single night of my life, Daniel. So Joe Ortiz has just been welcomed into this club. He should be thankful that it took him this long to wake up at 3 a.m. to get up, to be bothered by something that's weighing on his mind. So Joe Ortiz has lived a blessed life as an assistant for the Ravens general manager, Eric DaCosta, in Baltimore before getting the promotion to become the Chargers GM, where he now gets to decide what the team is going to do with the number five pick. And he gets to stay up until 3 a.m. thinking about it and wondering what the team should do.
Oh, Adam, come on. It's just an offensive tackle or maybe a generational wide receiver, or maybe you trade back. How's the decision that hard? There's just so many options available there. It's going to be very interesting to see what the Chargers do at number five. All right, topic number three, Adam. It's not just draft season. I feel like it's been mock draft season for forever, but Adam, it feels like everyone's got a mock draft now. I feel like there are a couple mock drafts that, you know, obviously I read Mel Kiper Jr.'s mock draft. I got to see what our buddy Fields Yates is doing out there. But it seems like everyone and their brother has got a mock draft as it is now.
Well, I think, Daniel, it's part of the expansion of the media and the NFL. It used to be that when I showed up at the Combine in Indianapolis in the early 1990s, there were no more than 10 reporters in attendance. 10. And at that time, when I was going to Indianapolis some 30 years ago, there were probably 2 mock drafts every year. It was a big deal to get the mock draft of Dr. Z, Paul Zimmerman, in Sports Illustrated and read who he thought would be going where. It was a big deal to read the mock draft of Rick Gosselin, the outstanding football writer for the Dallas Morning News, and Bob McGinn in Green Bay, who still does one and does a great job as well. And over time, there were some other mock drafts you'd pay attention to. I think Mike Mayock did an excellent job when he was with NFL Network. He was the first one I remember to forecast that Aaron Rodgers could fall from the number one pick to number 24. Now, we're in a day and age where there's not a day that doesn't go by where I don't see another mock draft from another person. They are as prevalent right now as the mushrooming of the football media, of the sports media, of the way the world has worked. It's just overflowing with mock drafts. And by the way, you can read them all. And I like to look at them all. It's like empty calories. You read, it's like, you know, Chinese food on a Sunday night. You eat it and you're hungry an hour later, right? It never fills you up. And that's what these mock drafts are. Chinese food on a Sunday night. I'm hungry an hour later for more substantive information, but it's great while I eat it. It makes sense. It's plausible. Oh, yeah, I could see that player going here or that player going there. It makes sense until the draft gets underway. There's one trade or one team makes a surprise move and the board gets blown up.
Yep.
Right. So it really means nothing, these mock drafts, but they are entertaining to read. It's just one of those things, Daniel. You keep reading them. They're easy enough to get through. They make a lot of sense.
Yep.
But in the end, ultimately, if a mock draft gets 3, 4, 5 picks right, That mock draft has crushed it. Yeah. So inevitably, 28, 29 of the picks are going to be wrong. But you read them and you're like, well, this makes sense. They all do. But there's so many of them that to me, they've lost some of their importance and significance just because everyone's got one now. It's like a podcast, I guess, right? Everybody's got a podcast.
It is like that. Yeah. Mock drafts are like podcasts. I wonder, Adam, you know, reflecting on listening to you talk about that, do you feel like teams traded as much back then as they do now? Because that's a part of the mock draft experience that's just so difficult to forecast.
That's consistent. Some years there are a lot of trades, other years not as many trades.
Okay.
Trading has been a regular, consistent part of drafts and will be, but inevitably any trade screws up a mock draft. Now mock drafts even begin to forecast trades, which that may be incorrect. Yeah. So if you get the trade wrong, then the draft is wrong. But yeah, we're going to get trades, but we're not going to get many mock drafts that have a high batting average.
All right. Well, how about this, Adam? Topic number four. Let's move ahead to this. Maybe our own little mini mock draft here. Obviously, we talked about the teams that definitely need a quarterback, teams we think might want to target the quarterback position. But I want to ask you, are there any sleeper teams that maybe we should keep an eye out for that might be trying to target a quarterback in this draft?
I always think that that's interesting. And if you're a team that's debating whether to pick a quarterback, you always have to watch out for somebody ambushing you. Like, nobody thought that the Chiefs were trading up to get Patrick Mahomes when they did. And so there's always somebody that can come out of nowhere. So here's what we do know, Daniel. We know the top three teams in this draft all need quarterbacks. 1, 2, 3. We know we could look at 11, 12, 13, which is the Vikings, Broncos, Raiders.
Yep.
All could use a quarterback.
Yep.
By the way, we're up to 6 in the top 13. I can make the argument that the Rams, with Matthew Stafford entering a contract where he has no guaranteed money next year, could use a quarterback. I can make an argument that the Seattle Seahawks, who have been noncommittal to Geno Smith and have a new head coach, could use a new quarterback, even though they went out and traded for Sam Howell. I could make the argument that the Atlanta Falcons still are in the market for a quarterback, which I think they are, to add another quarterback. The Dallas Cowboys could use one with Dak headed into the last year of his deal. There are a lot of teams out there that you could make an argument for that could use a quarterback. Now, there aren't enough of them to go around. Not every one of them is going to pick one, nor wants to pick one in the first round, nor is basically valued at the spot where a team is drafting. So this is going to create some interesting decisions, but there's always a sleeper team or two that come out of nowhere that pick a quarterback. And again, I won't be surprised if all of a sudden, you know, some team in round one grabs Michael Penix or Bo Nix at some point, or Spencer Rattler in the middle of round two, or Michael Pratt from Tulane at an earlier juncture that you thought. This is what happens when you have so many teams that need quarterbacks. And again, I would argue that outside 1, 2, 3, 11, 12, 13, there are other teams that also need quarterbacks that could always ambush any team that does need a quarterback.
Yeah, you just bringing up the idea of the Chiefs trading up to get Patrick Mahomes and how much that one decision sort of changed the outlook of the NFL when that happened with that one decision. Such an interesting thing to see what other teams are going to do here during the draft. All right, Adam, topic number five. I heard a pretty insane Ohio State stat about a run of uber-talented rookies, Adam, that you told me about. Talk to me about this interesting streak that Ohio State has put together in the NFL.
Daniel, if we go back to 2016, 8 years ago, there have been only 2 years in which Ohio State did not produce an NFL Rookie of the Year. 2016, whoa, Joey Bosa goes to the Chargers, wins Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2017, Marshawn Lattimore, same draft as Patrick Mahomes, by the way, goes to the Saints, one pick after Mahomes, and wins Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2019, Nick Bosa goes to the 49ers, wins Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2020, Chase Young goes to the Commanders, wins Defensive Rookie of the Year. 2022, Garrett Wilson goes to the Jets, wins Offensive Rookie of the Year. C.J. Stroud goes to the Texans last year, Offensive Rookie of the Year. Not to mention the fact that Jackson Smith and Jigba could have been a worthy candidate. Chris Olave in 2022 could have been a worthy candidate. So the board says that Marvin Harrison Jr. already is in great position to become the latest Ohio State player to win a Rookie of the Year award. And by the way, we'll get quarterbacks in all probability 1, 2, 3, But Marvin Harrison might just be the best wide receiver, some would say player, in this draft. And if he goes on to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, it will just continue a run of dominance from the Ohio State Buckeyes in terms of Rookie of the Year awards.
That's incredible. Honestly, Adam, that is an incredible streak for Ohio State to put together in the NFL. And it goes to showcase how good their program is coming out of college. All right. Topic number six in this last one, Adam, I'm actually going to hope and pull for this guy, J.J. McCarthy, former Michigan quarterback, to win Offensive Rookie of the Year in this draft, depending on where he goes. But I want to know, you sat down with him, visited with him last Friday. Tell me about your visit with J.J. McCarthy.
You know, he is such a great guy. And there's a reason that his draft stock has climbed as much as it has, because you can't meet J.J. McCarthy and not be impressed with him. I met him for the first time in person at Jim Harbaugh's golf tournament last summer in July. Then I brought O's the Mentalist to the University of Michigan last August. Spent some time with JJ again. And in fact, when I went that day with O's, my daughter came along. And my daughter Dylan is a big JJ McCarthy fan. And he had FaceTime with her at the Harbaugh golf tournament. I knew that she liked him. And then he met her again in August. So on Friday, this past Friday, when I sat down with him in Ann Arbor at the field house where Michigan was practicing, within 2 minutes, you know what he says to me? How's Dylan doing?
Stop. That's so cool.
Now, I'm just telling you, that's the kind of guy that this is. How, some 8 months later, would he remember the name of my daughter like that? 2 minutes into the conversation, how is Dylan doing? A little thing, but I'm just telling you, when you listen to him in the interview, I said, hey, what stands out about the process? He goes on and names the head coach, the GM in every place, knows the names, knows the actors, knows the people. Guy just gets it. He's on it. And when you are going to be the leader of your team, the quarterback of your team, the face of your franchise, it's about the intangibles. And J.J. McCarthy has got a lot of those intangibles. He is a model of upbeat positivity. He is somebody that you want to be around. He is the reason, and we will talk about this in the podcast, that Jim Harbaugh has all this man love for J.J. McCarthy, who he calls the best quarterback in this draft. Now, there aren't many others that believe that, but Jim Harbaugh truly does. He believes he's the best quarterback in this draft, and he's about to become the highest drafted Michigan quarterback in history. He's about to make his own history. And this was a guy that was kind enough to take about an hour of his time on Friday. We got to sit down, talk on camera, tape this particular podcast. Want to thank him for the time. Really enjoyed that guy. And you know what? Whoever drafts J.J. McCarthy this week, they're going to enjoy him too. Take a listen to the Michigan quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, during our visit in Ann Arbor this past Friday. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Adam.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
JJ, I believe in the last 4 months, You've won a national championship, turned pro, gotten engaged, and now are about to find out where you're going to be spending your future. How would you put into words how your life has changed these last 4 months?
It's a great question, Adam. I would say surreal. Surreal, everything about it, you know, you dreamed about as a little kid, you know, even the marriage part of it. And just being able to, you know, take a step back and have so much gratitude for where I am and, you know, so much excitement for where I'm going. It's been so much fun.
What do you imagine this week is going to be like for you?
I imagine this week is going to be like, you know, like I said, an out-of-body experience, something where I need to step back and really appreciate the moments that I'm experiencing. And, you know, with all my teammates coming out this year, enjoying it with them and making sure that, you know, we go into this new chapter knowing that we all have each other's back. And, you know, it's just going to be, you know, so much fun to see where I end up for, you know, for how many years to come.
And we're going to get to your teammates in a little bit here. What's going to go through your mind here? Can you have a moment of relaxation as you get ready for what's about to unfold on Thursday night?
You know, the moments of relaxation just come naturally for me. You know, that's something that I train every single day and make sure I stay in the present moment. And, you know, I haven't felt that anxiousness yet. I probably will when Thursday comes around. But you know, there's a lot of time in between now and then where I could get better and be a better version of myself than I was yesterday. So that's all I'm really focusing on, and you know, it's helped keeping me relaxed.
You mentioned the relaxation part, and I've already seen clips all over ESPN about you and your famous meditation. Will you meditate before the draft at all?
Yes, no doubt. That'll probably be more of the extensive meditations for sure, because you know, it's just such a big day and want to stay neutral, want to stay calm, and you know, be my best self.
Let's talk about the process a little bit. What has it been like training to get ready for the combine and now the NFL draft?
So training for the combine, it was a lot different than just the normal schedule I was used to for the last 3 years. It was, you know, you get up at around 7 o'clock, you get going, and I was out in California and we get going with, you know, film work, interview prep, and then you go out to the field, do some training with that. And it was all combine specific when I was out there, which I really appreciate with John Beck and what he was doing with us. He wanted to make sure we were focused on the task at hand, not worried about, you know, studying playbooks, studying, you know, different aspects of being an NFL quarterback. It was kind of the t-shirt Olympics, as we like to call it, and just focus on the little intricacies of the combine, and then, you know, just the whole meal prep side of everything and making sure that you're approaching this thing like a pro. And that's something that I really appreciated, because that's something that I wanted to do for my entire life, and just being a part of it and going through that whole process was something that, you know, made me very, very excited to get this thing going.
Post-combine, pre-draft process. A lot of visits, a lot of Zoom calls.
Yeah.
What stands out about that entire experience?
I would say what stands out is all the great people that I've met. You know, so many people that you've looked up to just going through this whole process as a youngin', and then being able to have dinners with them, sit down and have great one-on-one conversations with them and get to know them as human beings, because you look at them like idols and you look at them like role models, and then you have a conversation with them and they hit a couple jokes with you and you're like, wow, this is a really cool guy and I would love to play for him.
Like who?
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot. You know, I just got back from Washington and New England, and Coach Mayo and Coach Quinn and, you know, Elliot Wolf and Adam Peters, just such great guys that, you know, I know that what they're building is something that I would want to be a part of. And, you know, you go to Minnesota, the Coach O'Connell, Coach McCown, they all worked me out, and it was just a really cool experience to get coaching points from them, because it's so, so valuable. Whether I go to them or not, you have those, you know, nuggets to take with you wherever you go. And it's just been so much fun to be able to, you know, be exposed to that type of knowledge, type of wisdom.
And there's a lot of speculation about where you could wind up. You are a central, if not the central figure in this upcoming draft. I want to ask you what it would be like to wind up in a few different places. What would it be like for you to wind up in Minnesota? What would come to mind if I said to you, you're going to be a Viking, JJ?
It would be in the world, just because Coach O'Connell, he's a guy that, you know, I'd run through a brick wall for. Everything that he wants to do with his football team is something that I want to be a part of. And obviously being the NFC North, being a Bears fan my entire life, and being able to play at Soldier Field and stay in the Midwest and all that good stuff would be just a dream come true. But yeah, I love what they're building. Obviously, the weapons there are limitless, and you know, they got just a great thing going for them. So it'll be a blessing to be a part of it.
Could you be a Bears fan your entire life and then go play for the Vikings?
I can, yes, sir. Yes, sir, with smiles for sure.
What about the idea that you could wind up in New England playing for the Patriots?
Mm-hmm. So much honor and respect to be able to be in that position, just with the history that's been on display for these past years, and growing up and seeing all the success. And I met with Mr. Kraft, and just like the coolest, smoothest guy I've met in a long time, and just being able to know that you're in good hands when the Kraft family's running that whole thing. And obviously Coach Mayo has been a part of that success over the years, and what he's building is a feeling that I got when I first stepped onto Michigan is the sense of urgency to rebuild the culture, rebuild, this team to where they want to get to and where they were. Bringing so many guys back like Matthew Slater, Danny Amendola, just you could tell that they're, on the path to success and they're doing it the right way.
You wouldn't be the first quarterback from Michigan to wind up in New England if it happened to go that way.
Yeah.
What would that mean to you? And has Tom Brady had any advice for you during this process? Has anybody reached out like along those lines?
Tom and I have a great relationship. I ask him questions all throughout the season and stuff like that. I try not to bother him too much. I asked Matthew Stafford a little bit of advice about this process, and he told me that, he's a little far removed from it because it happened so long ago, so I didn't even bother to ask Tom. But it would just, such honor and respect, like I said, like being able to, I'm always about playing for the guys that came before and, the guys who built the foundation to where it is right now. So obviously being a part of the New England Patriots, that means everything, going back to when Brady was playing and how he was, doing it for Teddy Bruschi and Willie McGinnis and Ty Law and all those guys. So being able to pay that forward would be a tremendous honor.
What about if you wound up with the New York Giants? What would that mean to you, JJ?
That would mean everything. Obviously, just the city of New York is so special and such a live fan base. And Coach Dable and Coach Tierney, just amazing guys that I could play for. Coach Kafka, Chicago guy. Just being able to be a part of that system is very similar to the system I played in. So that would be a smooth transition. But, be able to learn from a guy like Daniel and be a part of that locker room would be something truly special.
And I think the other team we haven't asked you about is the Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
What was your interaction with them like, and what would it mean to play in Denver?
Yeah, Coach Payton, another Chicago guy, Naperville guy, but got so many great words of advice from him, and being able to be a part of that system, the one that the great Drew Brees was a part of, like that would be invaluable. And be able to, get coached by Coach Webb, who is just a tremendous guy, tremendous human being. He wants, genuine success out of you, and, genuine relationship was just something neat that, you don't see too often at the next level. And, it would mean everything, obviously, playing in that division, getting to see Coach Harbaugh twice a year and play against, the great Patrick Mahomes. It would just be awesome.
You bring up Coach Harbaugh.
Yeah.
The Chargers have the 5th overall pick.
Yep.
And there's a possibility in this draft that Jim Harbaugh may be trading the pick to the team that is going to draft you. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
For all you've done for him, helping him win a national championship, don't you think the least he could do is accommodate you, and with you telling him where you'd like to go so that you could influence where that pick could potentially be traded, JJ?
In a perfect world, yeah, that would be nice. That would be very nice. But, he's got a collaboration of people that make that decision, and, obviously that would be great, but, that's out of both of our
hands. How do you think Jim Harbaugh would feel about drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. in round one and having to coach him this upcoming season?
I think he would like that a lot. Definitely, going into that week, both years, just like the scouting report on him and just the enamored respect that he had for Marvin and his play and everything about his game just would be something that, every coach would just appreciate. I have so much respect for Marvin. I thought, like, he was my Heisman for the longest time, just being able to do what he does and make the impact he can on a game. He was the first receiver that I ever stood on the sidelines and was like, wow, I'm scared every time the ball's in the air and it goes his way, because he's just that good and he comes down with it. So, just being able to be a part of any organization is going to be great for that organization.
We bring up Jim Harbaugh, and Jim said that you were the greatest quarterback in Michigan history. He said you had the best pro day of any player he's seen.
Yeah.
And he says you are the best quarterback in this draft. What has all his praise meant to you? And if you want to take the opportunity to out-honor him, as he would say, feel free to do that too, JJ.
Yeah, I would say if anyone's a little biased, it would be him. But he knows what he's talking about, and he's been around so many great quarterbacks, so it means a lot. It means a lot coming from him, and especially the ultimate Michigan man. Like, if you think of Michigan man, it's Jim Harbaugh, you know, from a player, from a coach. He's done it all. So, you know, I hope one day that statue of him is going to be either in front of Schembechler Hall or outside of the stadium. But, you know, just can't thank him enough for everything, because I didn't get to where I was over these 3 years without him and without my teammates. And he's the glue that held it all together and made it happen.
How much interaction have you had with him leading up to this draft?
Not too much. You know, I hit him up here and there, but it's all out of just, you know, normal family life stuff. And, you know, we have such a great relationship off the field, and I'm trying to, you know, nurture that as much as possible. But, yeah.
You brought up your teammates that are going to be a part of this upcoming draft. And there were 18 Michigan players at the combine. There may be an equal number, if not more, who are drafted here. What should fans know about some of your former teammates and the mark that they're going to make in the NFL?
I want fans to know that, you know, winning isn't just, you know, something that happens. It's a habit, and you attract winning. I feel like what you do within your daily processes and what you do within each day is what attracts winning. Like, how do you attack meetings? How do you attack practice? How do you attack just any little thing to get yourself better? And every single one of those guys that are coming out there out this year are those guys that are going to attract winning and help multiply the winning culture throughout the team. And, you know, every organization wants those guys, and, you know, every single guy is going to be a good fit. And I want to say that every single guy is going to last in that league for, you know, a little bit longer than the usual 2-3 years. So, you know, I'm just really excited to see where they end up, see the situations they, you know, start to impact. And, you know, just got nothing but love for those guys, and I know they're going to do great.
Love and respect, and you talk about the mark they're going to make. But is there one guy you think who is going to shine on the next level that might surprise people?
That might surprise people. The biggest surprise will probably be A.J. Barner. You know, he wasn't asked to do a lot. He was asked to put his hand in the ground and play Michigan football. But the kid's talented, and he's got the size, he's got the athleticism. He can go up and make every catch. He's going to be in positions now where it's mostly a passing league in the NFL, where he's going to expose a lot of the talents and attributes that not many Michigan fans or any fans have seen. So I feel like he's going to have a great, great career, just because he's going to show everybody what he can really do and not have those limitations on him to, you know, block 32 times in a row against Penn State. So, yeah.
By the way, you're talking about him blocking 32 times, and there have been people who have said, JJ doesn't get to throw the ball enough, we haven't seen enough, they question some of the production. What do you say to those people who question that?
Well, I say this, you know, people forget this is the ultimate team game. Like, every one person has to do their job. And if they don't, if one person doesn't, you're not gonna have a successful play nor a successful year. And for me, you know, stepping into this Michigan offense, I knew what I was getting. Coach Harbaugh has been running this philosophy since he was at Stanford, probably even USD, but I didn't even go back that far. It's, you know, relying on the run game, using play actions, controlling the football, and trying to limit turnovers as much as possible. That's a winning formula. So I had to adapt to that formula. I came from a school where I was throwing the ball all the time, and, you know, I actually learned the experience my junior year when we lost in the state championship, that when it gets down to it and there's bad weather and it's out of your control and you don't know how to run the football and you don't lean on it, then you're screwed. You can't do anything. So I feel like just being a part of this system has prepared me so much for the next level, because it's opened my mind to how to play the position differently. And all the outside noise is just, you know, people that are looking at the stats, people that are looking at, you know, the sample size, and I understand that. It makes sense. I would be saying the same thing if I was them. But, you know, knowing how it actually was, being in the building every day, understanding the philosophy that Coach Harbaugh has, you know, I'm not too worried about it at all. And that's one thing that I really pride myself on. I'll adapt to anything. Whatever the coach wants me to do, I'll adapt, and you won't hear a peep out of me because I'm not going to let my personal motives affect what the team wants. Sacrifice what you want now for what you want most later. And that's something that I learned this past year more extensively.
Thursday night, mm-hmm. What are your plans for where to take in this draft?
So I'm going to be at a house right outside of Detroit and, you know, just going to have the whole village there because it really did take a village to get here. And, you know, the green room, I was thinking about it for the longest time, but I just want more than 8 to 10 people there to celebrate with me. So I have all the teammates there, have all the people from back home, and it'll be a special night.
So did you rent a house in Detroit?
Well, we actually had, I don't know if he's a donor, but a close friend of my dad that is offering up his, you know, Michigan house for us. So it's very special, very kind of him, and very appreciative for him.
And how many people do you expect to have at that house that night?
Probably around 100, 120 people, yeah.
Teammates, friends, family?
All of them. Whole nine yards, coaches, all that.
And is that part of the reason you're not attending the actual draft, because you want to celebrate with all your friends and family and a much larger group than you were allowed to at the NFL draft?
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's exactly why. Because, like I said, it took a village for me to get here, and, you know, I want to show my appreciation to them and celebrate together.
And when you hear your name called that night by one of these teams, mm-hmm. what do you think will be going through your mind, JJ?
Let's get to work. Like, I've been waiting since, you know, January 9th to just get to work again. And, you know, I can't wait to just, like I've been saying, this whole process, step out of the pond, jump into the ocean, and be amongst the best of the best. Can't wait for it.
And the last thing I want to say to you, you're sitting here in the Oosterbahn Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
You're on the Michigan campus.
Yeah.
You're about to leave the Michigan campus for the next chapter of your life.
Yeah.
How do you put into words what your time here has meant to you?
It's hard to put it into words. You know it best yourself. This is a special place. You know, all the lessons that I've learned, and, you know, on and off the field, invaluable. The impacts and relationships that so many people have had on me, invaluable. This place preaches, you know, the path of most resistance. And that's where you get better. That's where you, you know, strengthen that internal aspect of yourself. And I feel like, you know, I owe so much to this university because it's given so much to me. And, you know, I appreciate every single interaction I've had with every student, with every teacher, with every coach, with every staff member, I mean, with every janitor. Just so many great people, and so many great people that are living every day to the standard of excellence. And when you're around that 24/7, you are who you surround yourself with. So just being able to be a part of this, you know, culture, this mission to be great, you know, I'm forever grateful and forever in debt to it.
It becomes a part of you.
No doubt.
But it's always a part of you.
Yes.
And you can always come back to it. When you come back, like I get to come back now to talk to you
right.
about this process.
Mm-hmm.
It's special. Walk through the building,
yeah.
See the people.
Yeah.
And you have had a larger impact on this place than most anybody that's come through this university. So this is always going to be an incredibly special place for you and you to this place.
Mm.
So
that
you will treasure
me,
that
Adam.
In the years to come.
I appreciate that.
And it'll be a part of you.
Yes, sir. Michigan man for life. You know it.
Daniel, we talked about Ohio State and Marvin Harrison winning Rookie of the Year. And one thing that J.J. McCarthy said there that stood out to me right away, I asked him, you know, if there's somebody that caught his attention or however I asked him the question, and he said that Marvin Harrison Jr. is the only wide receiver that his teams have ever faced where he stood on the opposite sideline, stood up, and watched that guy out of fear that he would beat his team. So that was how J.J. McCarthy felt about Marvin Harrison Jr. and whoever gets Marvin Harrison Jr. this week in the upcoming draft. But you could hear the class and composure with which J.J. McCarthy carries himself. We are rooting for him to land in a great spot, to have a great NFL career. It's hard not to be around him and root for him. We wish him the best this week with the upcoming draft. Speaking of the upcoming draft, I will say it's a little personal, a little emotional for me. It'll be the first draft that I've covered for ESPN since 2010. That was the first draft that I ever did for ESPN. So this would be the 15th one, I believe, wow. Where every one of these drafts literally, I've been sitting right next to Chris Mortensen. Our knees have been touching for three straight days, you know, for the 4 or 5 hours on Thursday night or Friday and Saturday. And Mort will be right by my side. And, you know, last year when we were in Kansas City for the draft, he didn't feel great. And after the first night, he asked if it was okay that he just go home because he just had had enough. And I'm like, Mort, absolutely. Go back home, rest, relax, take it easy. But I knew that there was a very real chance that that was going to be his last draft. And I think he knew that that was going to be his last draft just because his time at ESPN was coming to an end. And we got to take a picture at the end of that Friday night. And I still have it on my phone, and it's something that I'll always have. And when I go to the draft in Detroit this week, and I'm sitting there Thursday night and Friday and Saturday, it will be very weird and isolated and solitary and sad and emotional not having Chris Mortensen by my side. He'll be in my thoughts all 3 days.
Yeah,
I will not walk out to that stage and not think of him. We're going to miss him this week. We always miss him. I can't tell how many times I think of him now. Like, man, I'd love to call Morton, just go over something with him, laugh about this, discuss that, get his thoughts on what he thinks here or there.
Adam, that's such a mark of a great man, for what it's worth. The idea that you have such, not just a fond recollection of him, but that you still now hold him in those memories in such high esteem, the way that he impacted you in your life. I mean, there's no greater way to say, like, what an awesome person to have been able to impact you in a way so strongly that, you know, this is going to be something very different for you. But those memories are never going to leave, man. And you know for a fact that Mort would be right there by your side, dude. So that's it's a big one. This is going to be a tough one.
Yeah, well, it is always tough. And so, again, I just wanted to just point out that, you know, we are thinking of him, and he will be on our minds tonight moving forward. And we'll miss Mort now, this weekend, of course, as we do always. All right, I want to thank J.J. McCarthy for the time that he gave us. I want to thank you, Daniel Dopp, for quarterbacking another six-pack and the rest of this podcast, the great producers here who did so much great work with J.J. and that interview, Christina Buswell, Sarah Abbott, and you, the listener, for tuning in to another Adam Schefter podcast. It's draft week, finally. As we said, it's the Super Bowl of the offseason, a night and a weekend where every team and its fan base looks forward to this. Their team's going to get the player or players that make the difference in that team getting to the Super Bowl next season. I always remember one of my friends who's a Jets fan texted me on day three of the draft about 3 years ago, and he said, "This is the biggest day in the history of the franchise." And I said, "Cool your Jets, literally, calm down." That's how people get about the draft sometimes.
That's right.
A little bit irrational, a little bit excited, but that's what makes the draft so much fun for the upcoming week. Well, I hope everybody gets to enjoy their draft. Have a great week. We'll be back in this spot next week. Until then, have a great week, everybody. Be well and stay safe.